Planet Earth revolves in space. In gold letters, the word Universal glides around the globe and comes to rest in front of it. Universal, an MCA company. Dark green comic book style letters glide down onto a black background. Universal Pictures presents a Bregman Bayer production, a film by Russell Mulcahy. Alec Baldwin. John Lone. Penelope Ann Miller. The green letters have formed the title, The Shadow. Rugged mountains rise up over fields of poppies, opium fields, Tibet. A few people tend to the plants, one of them shaving the side of a bird with a razor-like tool. A blue 1930s vintage car bounces along a dusty track through the fields. Ian McKellen, Peter Boyle, Jonathan Winters, and Tim Curry. Joseph Maher, John Capellos, Max Wright, Sab Shimono, Brady Tsuratani, Andre Gregory, James Hong, Arsenio Sonny Trinidad. Music composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith, based on Advance Magazine Publishers Inc.'s character, The Shadow. Written by David Coep, directed by Russell Mulcahy. The car approaches a large palace-style building and pulls up in front of stone statues outside. Two Far Eastern men drag another man out of the car and march him into the building. The prisoner, a middle-aged Oriental man wearing a metal warrior-style helmet, is brought into a chamber full of young men and women smoking opium pipes. A shadowy figure sits in a chair by the windows. An elderly Far Eastern man steps up to the prisoner.
Oh, you and your brothers murdered three of our men.
He would have done the same. Send three more and I'll kill him too. He already controls the opium trade all across Asia. May no one prosper but Ying Ko. My poppy fields are tiny. Nothing compared to his. Well, I, Li Peng, at least I'm entitled to my little piece. Ying Ko, if you kill me, I promise my brothers will come for you.
And I promise you.
The shadowy man leans forward.
I'll bury them beside you.
Kill him.
The shadowy figure is a Western man with long hair and long fingernails. The prisoner holds a knife to the old man's throat.
Let me go. I only wish to leave. I'll cut his throat. Your men are not marksmen enough to shoot around him.
You're right. You're right. Wu, you are a wonderful friend. Like a father to me.
Thank you, Ying.
The Western man turns to his guards.
Shoot through him.
The guards shoot the old man and the prisoner. Sultry young women smoking opium pipes laugh. The Western man yawns. Night falls. The Western opium lord lies asleep in bed. An image of a young, shaven-headed Oriental man haunts his dreams. The opium lord wakes and gets up from between two women. Bare-chested, he looks across at his open window, then turns round. Just as a man wearing heavy furs knocks him out. On horseback, two men wearing thick, heavy furs bring the opium lord to a dry, dusty clearing.
Where are you taking me?
Atulku wishes to see you at his temple.
A holy man wants to see me?
A hut.
You call that a temple?
No! There!
One of the men points. A thick cloud of dust behind the little hut blows away, revealing a vast, ornate temple.
Where did that come from?
The clouded mind sees nothing.
The long-haired opium lord stares in wonder, a curved cut on his forehead. Inside the temple, his wrists are untied, and he's pushed towards a vast pair of elegant opening doors. He walks through into a chamber. Two lines of monks banging drums stand on either side of a central aisle. The man reaches an altar, and more monks jangle bells. The monks disperse, and the man is left alone with a high priest, obscured by a thin gossamer curtain.
Who are you?
I am your teacher.
Do you have any idea who you just kidnapped?
Cranston. Lamont Cranston.
You know my real name?
Yes. I also know that for as long as you can remember, you struggled against your own black heart and always lost. You watched your spirit, your very face change as the beast claws its way out from within you. You're in great pain, aren't you?
The high priest vanishes and reappears.
You know what evil lurks in the hearts of men, for you have seen that evil in your own heart. Every man pays the price for redemption. This is yours.
I'm not looking for redemption.
You have no choice. You will be redeemed, because I will teach you to use your black shadow to fight evil. I wouldn't do that.
Cranston has grabbed a ceremonial dagger, which spins around in his hand. He lets it go, and it zooms through the air, hovering just above the floor. Cranston dives for the dagger, which flies up into the air, then zooms down and plunges into his leg. He collapses, and the dagger flies out of his leg, then plunges down, piercing the ground right between his legs. He grabs the dagger, and the face on its golden handle comes to life, showing needle-sharp teeth and biting his hand. He pulls the dagger off his hand and throws it. It zooms towards him like a guided missile, and he tries to hobble away as it rears up in front of him, its face snarling. The High Priest, the Tulku, is the young man from Cranston's dream.
Ferber!
Ferber, the dagger, looks at the Tulku.
Ferber!
It flies to his hand.
Am I in hell?
Not yet.
Captions roll. The price of redemption for Cranston was to take up man's struggle against evil. The Tulku taught him to cloud men's minds, to fog their vision through force of concentration, leaving visible the only thing he can never hide. His shadow. Thus armed, Cranston returned to his homeland, that most wretched lair of villainy we know as New York City, 7 years later. A suspension bridge spans a river in thick nighttime fog. A car pulls up on the quiet bridge, and a man gets out of the passenger seat wearing a suit, overcoat and trilby hat. The man rubs his hands against the chilly night air, and a couple of henchmen also get out of the car as the man walks to the railing and looks down at the river.
Get him, Johnny.
Maxie.
All right, let's get this over with.
Get out.
No. Come on.
No. Please.
Quit
I didn't see
whining.
Anything.
Is it drying?
A man in concrete boots.
Perfect, though.
Bring him to the rail.
I won't tell anyone. I swear.
The man is dragged to the railing.
I wish I could trust your sport. I really do. I guess you just picked the wrong alley to look down.
I have a family.
Don't get over it.
Don't talk. I'm telling you.
Oh, I know you won't. Dump him.
No! No! I hate him. No!
They hang the man over the railing.
What the Christ was that?
Who's there?
Duke and his goons look around the dark bridge, pointing their guns.
Show yourself, fella.
You murdered a policeman, Duke.
Who said that? Duke! Who said that? Shut up!
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit.
I don't like this. This stinks. Let's get the hell out of here.
Shut your hole, Maxie.
Did you think you'd get away with it?
Come on, Duke!
Did you think I wouldn't know?
Duke shoots his revolver wildly into the darkness. Once it's empty, he runs to the car and grabs a Tommy gun. Duke sprays bullets into the darkness, smashing street lamps, firing down an alleyway, into the river, and even shooting up his own car.
Ha! Duke, I think you got him.
You're damn right I...
He looks round. A figure seems to appear like mist and punch him.
You committed murder, Duke. Now you're going to confess to it.
Like hell I will!
You will, Duke. Because if you don't, I'll be there. I'll be there. Around every corner, in every empty room. As inevitable as your guilty conscience.
You don't scare me! You son of a...
Like human fog, the figure beats up Duke.
You will go to the 8th Precinct House on 2nd Avenue. And surrender yourself, and you will do it now.
I got this! I got this! I'll do it! I'll do it! Oh my God! Oh my God! I'll confess! For God's sake, I don't want to die!
The misty figure was holding Duke over the railing and throws him through the windscreen of his car. One of Duke's goons nudges the other, and they stare as the tall shadow of a man wearing a wide-brimmed hat looms over them. At the end of the bridge stands the figure, Lamont Cranston, as his alter ego, The Shadow. He wears a long black cloak, a large black fedora, and a crimson scarf pulled up over his mouth. His face seems different, thinner, and with a longer nose. Unnerved by the Shadow's icy stare, the Duke's henchmen run away. The Shadow strides across the bridge to the Duke's dumbfounded prisoner, who wears a wool three-piece suit and bow tie. The Shadow draws two large gleaming silver pistols. The prisoner looks down to see the concrete block on his feet now shot to rubble. The Shadow holds out his hand to the man as a yellow taxi with black roof and fenders pulls up. The Shadow and the man get into the back of the cab as its headlights rise up out of its fenders.
Drive.
A sunshine radio sign lights up on its roof.
Thank you. These fellows are probably busy. You can just drop me off anywhere along.
You're Dr. Roy Tam, a professor in the science department at NYU.
Yes.
I've saved your life, Roy Tam. It now belongs to me.
It does?
The cabbie drives them through town.
You'll become one of my agents. Like dozens of others all over the world.
Could I ask my wife about this?
No!
The cab turns a corner.
Mr. Shrevnitz here will instruct you in the way in which I will contact you should I require your help. When you hear one of my agents say, "The sun is shining," you will respond, "But the ice is slippery." This will identify you to each other. Do you understand?
The sun is shining.
But the ice is slippery.
Tell me one thing. How did you know what was happening to me? How did you know who I am?
The Shadow and stocky middle-aged cabbie Shrevnitz laugh.
The Shadow knows.
Dr. Tam looks nervous. The cab drives underneath a railway bridge towards a cluster of forbidding-looking skyscrapers. The cab pulls up on a street, and Shrevnitz and Tam get out.
Thank you. That's the Shadow. I mean, that's the Shadow.
Hey, you were a pretty smart guy.
Well, I heard rumors in the paper on the radio, but I thought it was just talk. I didn't think he existed.
He doesn't. Get it?
Tam looks at a red opal ring Shrevnitz put on his finger.
Don't ever take it off.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Somebody who owes him his life. Somebody just like you.
Shrevnitz also wears a red opal ring. He gets back into his cab, and Tam waves through the back window, as the cab drives away. Tam looks down at the ring on his finger. Shrevnitz looks in his mirror at the shadow.
Boss, you okay?
He's back to Cranston.
The Cobalt Club.
Shrevnitz's cab pulls up outside the glitzy Cobalt Club. A doorman shows the guests inside. Inside, a jazz band plays on stage. A sultry, dark-haired singer in a chic blue evening gown sways and turns to the microphone.
You're some kind of mystery. Sweet kind of mystery.
Well-to-do guests in smart evening wear dance in front of the stage. Other guests mingle around or sit at small tables in the ritzy club. Handsome, dark-haired Cranston, wearing a sharp black dinner suit and black bow tie, comes to the top of a short flight of stairs and looks out at the guests. He smiles and adjusts his shirt cuffs, then walks down the steps and onto the dance floor. He sits at a table where a chubby man in his 60s is eating.
Sorry I'm late, Uncle Wayne, right? But there was a little, accident on the bridge.
Well, I didn't think you wanted me to wait. Incidentally, try the prime rib. It's excellent.
Your usual, Mr. Cranston.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know, Lamont, I'm very upset with you.
What is it this time?
What is it this time? What is it every time? You ask me to dinner and show up an hour late. There's simply no excuse for that kind of
thing. Wait a minute. I'm sorry.
He sees a slim blonde come in.
I got caught up.
With what, for God's sake? You don't do anything. A man your age is unseemly. At least pick a hobby or something. Why am I talking to the back of your neck? Lamont? Lamont!
I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
You know, I've never meddled in your affairs. Going back to the time that, after the war, when you disappeared for some 7 years. I never asked any questions then. I'm not asking
Excuse
any questions.
Excuse me, please, Commissioner Barth. Urgent message for you, sir.
Thank you. What's the matter? Cops and robbers business slowing down?
Uh-oh. It's reported that damn shadow character again.
But you said he was only a rumor.
I'm sick of the shadow business. His meddling in police affairs. This time tomorrow. I'll put a task force on him.
A shadow falls over Cranston, and he stares at Wainwright.
You're not going to appoint a task force.
No. Hell with it. I'm not going to appoint a task force.
You're not going to pay any attention to these reports of the shadow.
Ignore them entirely.
There is no shadow.
Well, there is no shadow. If there were, I'd be Eleanor Roosevelt.
Wainwright rubs his eyes.
Where was I?
You were about to tell me who she is.
That's Margot Lane. Her father's a scientist working for the War Department. What the hell do you see in her?
Uncle Wainwright, are you sure you're not dead?
Not by a long shot.
Cranston whispers to a waiter.
Do yourself a favor. Stay away from her. She's strange. She hears voices. That's what they say.
Really?
Margot calls the waiter.
Yes, I would like a glass of the Mouton.
Rothschild, 1928.
Yes.
And the gentleman.
Gentlemen.
Lamont Cranston. May I sit?
Margot smiles and Cranston sits down. They clink glasses.
You know, it's the strangest thing, but I have this sudden craving for Peking duck.
That's so odd. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Care to join me?
They're in a Chinese restaurant. Cranston orders.
You speak Chinese?
Only Mandarin.
Well, aren't you full of surprises?
He looks at her.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Oh, I had it made at Adrian's.
Why did you just tell me that?
Well, you just complimented me on my dress just now. Didn't you?
No, I didn't. But I was thinking it.
Oh, now that hasn't happened to me in a long, long time. Since I was a little girl with my cousin Harry, I could hear what he was thinking, just pick the thoughts right out of his head before he said a word. It was the strangest thing, and I never was able...
Cranston looks uneasy.
Is something bothering you?
Owen! No. Not at all.
He smiles and sips his wine. Shrevnitz's cab pulls up outside a terrace of smart houses. Cranston gets out of the back of the cab, then helps out Margot.
Well, thank you. I had a wonderful time.
I'm not sure I can recall an evening as stimulating.
He holds out his hand, and she takes it.
Good night, Miss Lane.
Good night, Mr. Cranston.
Margot heads up a flight of stairs to her front door, while Cranston gets back into the cab.
I like her, boss. She's different than your usual dames.
More than even she knows.
How's that?
She has abilities she's completely unaware of.
No kidding. You going to see her again?
No, it's much too dangerous.
Dangerous for who?
For me, Mo. For me.
Later, Cranston is asleep in an armchair in his opulently decorated living room. A fire crackles in the large fireplace in front of him, and a glass of brandy rests in his hand. Still asleep, Cranston trembles, and a huge pillar of flames belches out of the fireplace. A face appears in the flames and laughs at sleeping Cranston. The flames ignite the brandy, and Cranston's glass breaks. The flames retract into the fireplace, and Cranston wakes up.
Someone's coming.
In the New York Museum of Natural History, the white-haired, distinguished-looking curator checks his pocket watch as he strides past a huge dinosaur skeleton. He walks into a storage area, where a security guard is waiting with a flustered member of staff.
Well, what is it?
That's just it, sir. I don't know. I would have labeled it a mummy case coming from Tibet like it did.
Mummy cases come from Egypt. Very good.
Well, that's right, exactly. So besides, the thing is metal, which made me think it was a sarcophagus.
No, Tibetan sarcophagi were of stone. What happened to the truckman who dropped it off?
Gone.
Well, it's obviously an incorrect shipment. Call our customs broker and... My God, this is beautiful. That is solid silver. Nelson, help us take the sides off.
The guard crowbars the remains of a wooden crate away from the silver sarcophagus. The curator takes a desk lamp and shines it onto a plaque on the sarcophagus's side.
What does it say?
It's Latin. Car can, de potestas in terra, the power of God on earth, the seal of the emperor of mankind. Oh my God. Temujin. This is the silver coffin of Temujin.
Who's Temujin?
The man who very nearly conquered the globe 8 centuries ago.
Well, how come I never heard of him?
Temujin was the birth name of Genghis Khan. What was the shipper's address?
Didn't say. Label just had the country of origin.
Let me make a telephone call.
Let me help you.
Nelson, whatever you do, don't open it.
No, sir.
Berger and the curator leave. Nelson, the guard, stares at the intricately decorated sarcophagus, then steps back to his desk.
run along and listen to a lullaby.
Nelson looks up, then looks back down at his desk. He looks round at the sarcophagus.
Broadway.
A circular catch at the top of the sarcophagus snaps open. Nelson gets up, draws his revolver, and cautiously steps over to the sarcophagus. He reaches up to the catch, and it snaps shut again. As Nelson turns away, the catch snaps open. He reaches up, and yet again it shuts. Two more catches open lower down. Nelson reaches down to them, and they close too. All the catches along the seam of the sarcophagus begin opening and closing. Nelson backs away nervously as the catches open and close like snapping mouths. Suddenly, the sarcophagus doors fly open. Smoke pours out, and an Oriental man stands inside, dressed in the clothing of a Mongol warrior. The man removes his metal mask, and eyes closed, takes in a deep breath. Nelson timidly points his gun.
We're closed.
Join me, or die.
Excuse me?
The man steps out of the sarcophagus.
Join me, or die.
This is private property.
Your mind is weak.
Don't come any closer.
Fall to your knees.
Nelson sinks to his knees.
Put your gun to your temple.
In a trance, Nelson points his gun at his head.
Sacrifice yourself to me.
Yes, my God.
Elsewhere in the museum, Berger and the curator hear the shot. They run to the storage room.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. We were only gone for a moment.
Khan stands stock still among some mannequins. The curator looks round and Khan has gone. In the US Federal Building, soldiers guard the laboratory of Dr. Reinhard Lane, War Department Research and Development. Inside, a man in a pinstripe suit is pestering Lane.
You didn't hear me, did you? I'm through with the beryllium sphere. I'm just doing some underwater tests to check pressure.
Farley, I have told you a dozen times we are doing energy research. I'm not interested in any military application of the project.
Yeah? So why'd you let the War Department pay all the bills?
Because you talked me into it. I just wanted enough money to finish.
Dr. Lane, you don't think big. If you'd only listen to me, the world could be our oyster.
Oysters? I get a rash from oysters.
The man, Farley Claymore, comes out of the lab and gives the soldiers a cocky salute. He sees Margot still in her evening gown walking up the corridor.
Oh, Margot! What a beautiful dress! And such a clever neckline.
Excuse me, Mr. Claymore, I'd like to see my father.
So, when are you going to come down and see my beryllium sphere?
I'm not interested in your spheres, Mr. Claymore.
He walks round in front of her.
Margot, you don't return my calls anymore.
Well, that's not true. I never did return your calls.
I know. I can't imagine why.
It's because I don't like you.
She walks past him and goes into the lab.
Dad, I don't know how you can work with that man.
Margot, what a nice surprise.
Hi.
Hey, have you had your dinner?
Yes, Dad, it's 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. Dad, where did you get this shirt?
Well, you said I look good in green.
No, this is green. That's red.
Red, green. Well, to me, it's just a clean shirt.
He drinks from his green mug.
Dad, do you believe in telepathy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you believe that it can exist between certain people?
You mean mind reading? Well, of course I don't, dear. I'm a sadist.
So strange. I've always had this feeling that there was this indescribable connection out there, just waiting for me. And suddenly tonight, there it was.
Well, that's nice, dear. What was it?
It was a man. And I'm probably never going to see him again.
But why not?
I just know. It was as though I could sense what he was feeling. And now I'm completely and utterly depressed.
Well, that's nice, dear.
A taxi pulls up in town. Khan is in the back.
Okay, that'll be 4:45.
What are you doing?
Writing down a drop-off point.
You're making a record of my destination?
Taxi commission's rules.
Khan, who has long brown hair and a beard and still wears his Mongol warrior's apparel, gets out of the cab and sees a fuel truck backing into a gas station up the road. He stares at the cab driver.
You need fuel.
The cabbie looks at his full gauge.
Jeez, I need gas.
He sees the station up ahead.
Hey, thanks.
The cabbie sets off towards the gas station, seemingly unaware of pedestrians who jump out of the way.
This first be my lucky?
The cab slams into the side of the fuel truck, which explodes in a huge ball of fire. Khan laughs as clouds of flame engulf the truck and the cab. As stunned onlookers yell to each other, Khan slowly walks across the road. An ambulance men are at the Museum of Natural History. Nelson's body is covered by a sheet. Wainwright comes in and talks to a police sergeant.
Well, what's going on?
Inspector Cardona's in charge, sir. He's over there.
The sergeant points. Wainwright grimaces at Nelson's covered body and walks off. The sergeant steps away, passing a photographer who takes a picture of the dismantled crate the sarcophagus arrived in. The sergeant, wearing a long black regulation coat over his police uniform, crosses a busy road and strides up to an empty-looking business premises. He discreetly produces a key and unlocks the door. On his finger is a red opal ring. He goes into the premises and shuts the door behind him. The sergeant marches down a corridor and slides a note through the letterbox of a door marked B. Jonas. The note goes into a message tube on the other side of the letterbox and slides down a long, thin pipeline, which leads across the room and through a wall. The long, snaking pipeline runs over a rooftop, down a wall, and into another building. The message tube zooms through the vast pipeline, which twists and bends high above the city streets. The pipeline now heads upwards into another building and ends in a small control room, along with about 20 other pipes. A man wearing a shirt and waistcoat takes the message tube out of a mesh trough at the end of the pipe. The man, who also wears a red opal ring, takes the sergeant's note out of the tube and reads it, then presses a button on his desk. A red light comes on. At home, Cranston's adjusting his tie in a mirror as the red opal in his ring starts to glow. He strides out urgently. Shrevnitz is speeding through town in his cab, a couple of frightened passengers in the back. He notices his ring flashing and skids to a halt.
Out! Thank you.
Shrevnitz picks up Cranston outside his home.
To the sanctum.
Shrevnitz's cab pulls out of the driveway of Cranston's vast, stately townhouse and drives away.
Go, go, go.
The cab drives along a bustling city boulevard and pulls up by the curb. Cranston gets out, puts on his black Homburg hat, and walks away. Wearing a smart suit and black overcoat, Cranston turns down a side alley and checks behind him. He presses a secret switch disguised as a join in a flight of metal stairs. A grating in the ground descends in sections to form a flight of steps, and a section of wall slides away. Cranston steps through the open section of wall, then presses another switch, closing it again. Heavy iron shutters rise as Cranston comes down a flight of stairs into his dimly lit sanctum. He sits at a control panel and flicks switches. The man in the control room's face appears on a small screen.
Report.
Our agent in 26th Precinct reports police investigation of murder at Museum of Natural History.
Murder?
Agent advises inquiry.
Understood.
He hits a button and the telescreen closes. Cranston sits in his chair, gazing pensively into space. He looks round and sees Khan standing at the foot of the stairs, staring at him. Cranston gets up and slowly walks towards Khan.
I saw you as taller.
Who are you?
Siwan Khan, last descendant of Genghis Khan. You are naturally deeply honored. Don't feel obligated to introduce yourself. I already know who you are, not this temporary version of yourself. I know who you really are. Yinko. I'm a great admirer.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Please. It is no more difficult for me to invade your mind than it was this room. May I sit?
Khan sits by the fireplace.
You are hurting my feelings, Inko. I should have thought you would enjoy to meet another with a unique ability to cloud men's minds.
You were a student of the Tulku.
Yes, he spoke of you constantly. But I'm afraid he wasn't able to turn me quite as easily. Hey, would you happen to have some American bourbon? I have a bit of a taste for it. Hey, I'm happy to pay, of course.
No, not at all.
Cranston steps over to his drinks cabinet.
Say, you didn't happen by any chance to, pay a visit to the museum last night, did you?
A wonderful collection of Tibetan tapestries.
They clink glasses and drink.
Oh, Yinko, grown man still shiver at your name. You are, I have to confess, my idol. Your raid on the village of Baga, I studied it. How nice you remember it.
It rings a bell.
It was a masterstroke. Swift, vicious, and sudden. What genius.
What brings you to the Big Apple?
My destiny. Genghis Khan conquered half the world in his lifetime. I intend to finish the job.
And how do you plan to do that?
If I told you, it wouldn't be a surprise. I traveled to this country in Genghis Khan's holy crypt to absorb his power in 3 days. The entire world would hear my roar and willingly fall subject to the lost empire of Shan King. That is a lovely tie, by the way. May I ask where you acquire it?
Brooks Brothers.
Is that Midtown?
45th and Madison. You are a barbarian.
Thank you. We both are. I know that inside you beats a heart of darkness. You dip into it every time you put on that hat and cloak. Join me. You are Yinko, the Butcher of Lhasa. You, and only you, deserve to be by my side. Together, we'll pit armies against one another like a chess game. We'll collect our due of pain. We'll wash our hands in blood. Your mouth still waters have real power. I am offering you a chance to take it back. Be my partner, Jinko.
That's not my name anymore.
But it is. Nevertheless, still who you are, isn't it?
Khan throws a coin to Cranston.
For the bourbon. We will meet again soon.
Khan has gone. Cranston looks down at the strangely carved coin, which has a square hole in its centre. Khan kneels in a chamber, the black and gold design on his cloak matching the elegant tiling on the floor. Men in armour stand around him.
The day of the Mongol warrior is once again at hand. Soon, with wings outstretched, we fly to our destiny!
Dr. Tam and his wife are having breakfast.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America. Flash, Manhattan reels from yet another report of the elusive shadow.
This, you know, I think they just made up the shadow so people would listen to the radio more. What do you think, Roy?
He looks at the opal ring.
Roy?
I get it.
He opens the door to Cranston.
Yes.
The sun is shining.
But the ice is slippery. You're an agent of the shadow.
Who?
Oh, yeah. Right. Gotcha. What do you need?
I need a metal analysis of this.
The coin. In his lab, Dr. Tam pours liquid on the coin. The Petri dish shatters.
Francium.
He lifts the coin out with tweezers.
Metal is bronzium. I didn't think it existed, but my God. Here it is. The ancient Chinese believed this was the very stuff the universe was formed of. Where did it come from?
I'm told it came from Xian King.
If you believed in legends, it had to be Xian King. They called it the birthplace of the world.
Could bronzium conceivably be used to make some sort of a weapon?
Theoretically, yes.
How?
Well, supposedly it's very unstable on the molecular level, constantly given to expansion. Only the cell bonds hold it in check. But if the bonds were ever breached...
By an explosion?
It wouldn't do it. But if the power of the cell were to turn on itself in an implosion, the molecular imbalance will be released, and then you'll have your explosion, all right.
How big?
No man can see. The breakdown would spread to all levels of the cell's atomic construction. Fashioned into a bomb, it would be catastrophic. I guess you'd call it an implosive, explosive, submolecular device.
Or an atomic bomb.
Hey, that's catchy. But it would have to have a beryllium sphere to contain the apparatus. No other metal would enhance a blast. In any case, it's all moot. None of this would be possible. Unless some genius figures out how to design and make it. The implosive device. It had to be full of a shell with tiny implosive charges regularly spread over the surface. Something like this. Fortunately, such a device doesn't exist.
Dr. Tam's drawn the device on a blackboard. In his own laboratory, Dr. Lane is working on a device which bears an uncanny resemblance to Tam's drawing. Khan kneels before an altar, on which stands candles and an incense burner. He mumbles prayers and motions with his hands. Behind the altar, a design on the wall seems to come to life, squares and colours floating away from the wall and hovering over Khan. Khan opens his dark eyes and the design returns to the wall.
Reinhardt Lane.
An aerial view soaring over the vast skyscrapers and busy nighttime streets of New York. The sweeping panorama leads to the tall US Federal Building and Dr. Lane's lab. Alone in his gloomy lab, Dr. Lane goes over his notes while chemicals bubble in beakers and flasks. He sits at his desk and looks at the device, a dark spherical object with impulse charges placed across its surface.
Reinhardt Lane.
Lane looks up, bewildered. He steps out of his lab and onto a balcony. Dr. Lane ambles over to the end of the balcony and looks at a large hoarding for Llama cigarettes, which shows a man's face with a cigarette held close to his lips and has real smoke puffing out of his open mouth. Dr. Lane reaches into his pocket, takes out a packet of cigarettes, and puts one in his mouth. He lights the cigarette and glances back up at the hoarding. His casual look becomes a glassy, trance-like stare. The face on the hoarding morphs into the face of Khan.
Reinhardt Lane.
Yes, my Khan.
The club.
You know something, Lamont, that puzzles me? How a man like yourself, who has absolutely nothing to do, can be late for every little engagement.
Practice, Uncle Wainwright. Lots and lots of practice.
Waiter, get me some more chives, would you please? And, oh my God, here comes that Lane woman. Oh, please, I don't need her anymore. Miss Lane, how are you?
All right, you can drop the act, Commissioner. What have you done about my father?
My secretary made it very clear that there's nothing we can do unless...
Unless what? He blows himself up?
Margot Lane, my nephew, Lamont Cranston.
Yes, we met.
Would you, care to join us?
She sits at their table.
Miss Lane, the fact that your father is acting strangely, I don't think really calls for a police investigation.
Look, I just want to see him. The War Department says he suddenly decided to take no visitors, not even his own daughter.
Well, chances are he's working on some top secret. It is a government project, you know.
No, his project is harmless. Energy research, some kind of implosive device. Look, I know something's wrong. I spoke to him on the phone. Was distant, confused, babbling. He spoke to me in Chinese.
Oh, waiter.
He doesn't even speak Chinese.
I'm sorry, please. Tomorrow, I'll send a policeman over to the federal building. You'll see your father and everything will be fine, right?
What's your opinion, Mr.
Cranston's gone.
Excuse me.
Margot grabs her coat and goes. In the lobby, Cranston takes his scarf, hat and coat and is just walking to the door as Margot runs after him.
Lamont!
She follows him onto the street.
Wait a second, Lamont. I wanted to ask you about my father.
I have to go.
Ying Ko! Who's Ying Ko?
He grabs her arm and a shadow falls across his face.
You will forget about me.
Why would I do that?
You will give me no further thought.
Are you drunk? Look, Mr. Cranston, I don't know what kind of woman you're used to dealing with, but I certainly don't appreciate being... Hey!
He gets in the cab.
The federal building.
You got it, boss.
Shrevnitz looks in his rearview mirror. A shadow passes over Cranston's face, and it takes on the heavy, sharp-nosed features of the Shadow. The Shadow puts on his wide-brimmed fedora, along with his crimson scarf covering his mouth. In his lab, Dr. Lane takes his atomic device and places it in a case marked War Department. The soldiers are standing guard outside.
Pizza?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to eat a burger again.
I'm not asking you to eat a burger.
Their hands move to their guns as the lift doors open down the corridor. Nobody comes out.
You like fish?
How about a burger?
Suddenly, one of the guards is hit in the chest by a crossbow bolt. Then the other is hit. Dr. Lane stands waiting in his lab as a Mongol warrior comes in and walks over to him. Dr. Lane puts the case down on his workbench and the warrior walks out onto the balcony. The warrior looks around, holding his crossbow poised. Suddenly, the shadow grabs the warrior's battle helmet and lifts him off his feet. The warrior throws the shadow, who performs a somersault and arrives back on his feet. The warrior draws a sword and the shadow tackles him, forcing the sword from his hand and punching him in the face. As they wrestle on the balcony wall, the shadow throws the warrior off and falls with him. They land on a stone eagle a few floors below.
Next time, you get to be on top.
More warriors stride into Dr. Lane's lab. They draw swords and ready crossbows. Suddenly, the shadow appears out of thin air and thumps the chief warrior. The warriors stalk around the lab. Suddenly, two of them are thrown into benches of equipment. The shadow appears and punches two more, only to vanish again. The chief warrior picks up his torch and shines it around the lab, while one of his men appears to take a beating from thin air. The chief warrior shines his torch around the lab. Suddenly, the torchlight picks out the shadow's shadow on a far wall.
Someone get it done!
He barks orders to one of his men who fires a crossbow. The bolt hits the shadow's shoulder, and a second bolt hits the other shoulder, pinning the dark silhouette to the wall. The warriors laugh. Then the shadow steps out from the silhouette, leaving his cloak hanging by the crossbow bolts. The warrior reloads his crossbow and the shadow draws his guns, blasting him. Another warrior makes to attack and the shadow turns the guns on him. Warriors shepherd out Lane, who carries the case containing the atomic device. A warrior barges the shadow onto the balcony and lunges at him. The shadow ducks and the warrior falls over the balcony wall, but the shadow grabs his hand.
Where is Khan?
I will not tell you.
What are you doing? Hold on or you'll die!
Yes, to serve my God!
He falls.
I sense somebody's coming.
The warrior slams down onto the pavement behind Shrevnitz. Shrevnitz looks down at the dead warrior, then gets into his cab. The shadow's already in the back seat.
Drive.
The yellow and black cab roars off. Margot comes home and answers her phone.
Hello?
Hello, Margot.
Oh, Dad. Are you all right?
I'm fine, dear. I need to see you right away. At the lab.
Are you there now?
Hurry.
Khan hangs up the phone for him. Margot comes out of the lift and sees the dead soldiers outside the lab.
Oh, no. No. No.
Panicking, she runs up the corridor to the men.
Oh, God. Dad! Dad! Where are you? God, no.
She goes into the lab and looks around at the wreckage and devastation. She steps onto the balcony and walks towards the Lama cigarettes hoarding. Her expression becomes glassy and trance-like. In his opulent chamber, Khan slides Margot's fur coat off her shoulders and walks around her, observing her slim, pale figure. Dr. Lane steps towards him and opens a wooden case containing a revolver and six bullets. Khan takes the revolver and loads a bullet into the cylinder.
I have a mission for you, my dear.
He places the gun in Margot's hand. Cranston's at home bathing a wound on his shoulder. Margot walks up the stairs. Hearing the creak, Cranston looks up. The long-barreled revolver in her hand, Margot paces along Cranston's landing like a zombie. Cranston, wearing trousers and a white vest, dabs cotton wool on his cut shoulder. The door slowly opens and Margot peers into the room. She sees Cranston tending to his shoulder and aims the gun right at him. The bullet smacks into Cranston's reflection, shattering a full-length mirror. Still holding the gun out, Margot steps into the room. Cranston slowly walks over to her, closes the door, and takes the gun out of her hand. He lowers her arm and waves his hand in front of her face. No reaction.
Margot Lane.
She wakes.
What are you doing here?
You're in my home.
Home.
What are you doing here?
I don't know.
Who sent you?
I don't know.
Who sent you?
I don't know. There was a voice over and over in my head. It said I had to kill the shadow.
Her eyes widen.
I want you to leave right now.
I had to kill the shadow when I came here.
I said I want you to leave right now.
And there was only you.
Get out.
Let me see into your eyes.
His eyes turn black.
You want to see into my eyes?
I think.
Go ahead.
I know something.
Look at them. Look at them.
Something strange about you. I could feel it.
But I've got to warn you.
I could feel it.
You won't like what you see.
Static in my head whenever I was near you. I knew it. You're the shadow.
She gazes at him breathlessly.
My father's disappeared. You're the only one who can help me find him.
Just be gone when I get back.
She blocks his way.
How do you know I won't tell anyone who you really are?
I know.
He leaves. Shrevnitz's cab is waiting outside and Cranston gets into the back.
To the sanctum.
The large wrought iron gates open, and the cab pulls out of Cranston's driveway. Another cab waits on the side of the road with Khan in the back. Khan gestures to the driver, and they follow Cranston. Shrevnitz pulls up on a rain-washed street, and Cranston gets out of the cab. He walks down the street and pauses to put on his Homburg hat, spotting Khan in the wing mirror of a parked car. Cranston walks down a street with Khan following him. Cranston ducks into a shadowy doorway. Khan looks around for Cranston but can't see him and carries on down the street. Cranston steps out of the doorway and strolls into Chinatown where Catherine wheels and firecrackers are going off. He follows Khan along the bustling street. Khan steps into a restaurant, and Cranston cautiously follows. Cranston jogs up a flight of stairs and walks through a bead curtain into a dingy restaurant area. He sees a man sitting alone at a small table with his head down, eating. Cranston walks over and the man looks up. It's Khan, now wearing a double-breasted suit and tie.
Nice tie.
Thank you.
Smiling, Khan gestures him to sit. Cranston takes off his hat and coat and sits, pulling off his leather gloves.
By the way, you sent Margot Lane to kill me.
Kill you? If I wanted you dead, Yinko, I would have your liver on the pole by now.
I didn't go to be killed. Tell me, how did you kill her?
She's alive.
And she's a danger to you. She now knows exactly who you are. How long will you let her live? How long before your pure instincts take over?
I'm onto your plan, Khan. You still don't have the beryllium sphere, and without it, you can't complete the bomb. Besides, you know I'm gonna stop you.
You American are so arrogant. You think your meaningless, decadent country is the new cradle of civilization. But let me tell you something.
That's the US of A you're talking about, pal.
I am talking about ruling the world.
I'd like to give you a name. Leonard Levinsky, brilliant psychiatrist.
You are boring me!
He slams down the Ferber knife.
Oh, that knife.
Recognize it? I took it from the toku.
No. I correct myself. I took it out of the toku after I ran it through his heart.
When will you learn to listen to your instincts?
Instincts? I'll show you my instincts.
The knife won't let him stab Khan.
Never did master the Ferber, did you? Still expected to respond to brute force.
A warrior points a gun at Cranston.
My Mongol warrior aren't terribly bright, but they are loyal. Accept the truth. There is no light without shadow, and you and I are their shadow. I would sooner destroy a Rembrandt than kill you. For the last time, will you join me?
You cannot fool me. You cannot defeat me. Your mind is an open book to me.
Then learn how to read.
He gets the gun.
Weakling!
Khan stabs the warrior with the Ferber. He and Cranston both aim their guns and shoot at each other. The bullets collide in midair and drop to the floor. Khan yells at the window, which shatters, and he leaps through. He lands in the street outside while Cranston charges down the stairs. A warrior rides over on a motorcycle combination, and Khan jumps into the sidecar. Cranston runs out of the restaurant and into Shrevnitz's cab.
Tell him, Bob!
Shrevnitz speeds off after the motorbike and sidecar. He takes a left turn and finds the street ahead empty.
He's disappeared, boss!
Stop the car.
Shrevnitz stops by a junction and Cranston gets out. He looks over at a stretch of waste ground surrounded by wire mesh fencing, near where Khan made the taxi crash into the fuel truck. Cranston walks over to the waste ground and leans on the fence, staring at the garbage being blown by the wind. Cranston seems to be deep in thought as he gazes at the vacant ground. He looks up at the sky, then turns to Shrevnitz, who's standing beside him.
It's just an empty lot, boss.
Cranston looks back at the stretch of derelict ground, then walks back to the cab. Shrevnitz follows him. Rubbish flutters across mounds of earth on the vacant lot. Cranston returns home and finds Margot asleep on the couch in front of the fireplace. He walks over and looks down at her, and she wakes.
I can't help that I know what I know about you.
She sits up.
And I can't forget it either.
She stands and steps up close to him, tilting her head as though to kiss.
It's late. Sleep here if you like. There are guest rooms.
but in the morning you should go.
I'm not afraid of you.
He gently touches her cheek, and she closes her eyes. He walks away. Wearing shirt and trousers, Cranston lies on his bed, then sits up. He gets up, opens his bedroom door, and walks out onto the landing. Margot lies asleep in bed in one of the guest rooms. Cranston comes in and looks at her, then runs his hand through his thick black hair. He feels something on his cheek and steps over to a mirror. Cranston picks at his cheek and pulls off a small piece of skin. He pokes his fingers into the hole and pushes them deep into his face, stretching out his flesh like it's a mask. Cranston works his entire hand into his face and rips off the skin, revealing Khan underneath. Margot sees him. He wakes up.
Oh my God.
Back on his bed, Cranston pants anxiously. Next morning, Margot, wearing a silky pale pink nightgown, lies on her bed, gently sleeping. Cranston, wearing a smart suit and tie, comes in and looks down at her. She rouses and smiles.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh God, I dreamed.
So did I. What did you dream?
I was lying naked on the beach in the South Seas. And the tide was coming up over my toes. The sun was beating down. My skin was hot and cool at the same time.
She caresses her shoulders.
It was wonderful. What was yours?
I dreamed I tore all the skin off my face and was somebody else underneath.
You have problems.
I'm aware of that.
I'll wait for you outside while you get dressed.
Oh, that's okay. You can stay. Oh, these are all rumpled.
Well, there might be some things in here that you could use. This belonged to my Aunt Rose.
Oh, really?
Very fashionable gal, that Rose.
Mm-mm. Kept her figure, too.
Yeah. Well, I've got to run. I've got a...
taxi waiting downstairs.
Excuse me?
Oh, I just sensed that's what you were going to say. It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Hey, this is getting easier the more I'm around you. You're like reading a book. Well, thank you very much, Lamont, but I won't be needing that taxi.
Well, yes, you do. I have a very important...
Great. I'll come with you.
No, last night we agreed...
I didn't agree to anything.
Do you mind if I just get one tiny little sentence out here? Thank you very much. Last night we both agreed that you were going to leave this morning.
No, you agreed I was going to leave. I agreed to no such thing. We need each other.
No, we don't.
We have a connection.
No, we don't.
Then how do you explain that I can read your thoughts?
My thoughts are hard to miss.
And why is that?
Psychically, I'm very well endowed.
I'll bet you are. Okay, so you don't need me, but I need you, Lamont. Help me find my father. And I am coming with you.
Okay.
On top of the Empire State Building, Lane points at the skyline.
From there to there. That is just the explosion. The destruction will be incalculable.
Good.
What a beautiful day.
Nice dress, Toots.
A passing sailor smirks at Khan's robe. Khan stares at the sailor, who stops and turns round. Khan gazes intensely at the sailor, who, unable to stop himself, climbs up onto the wall and over the metal safety railings. The sailor stands on a narrow ledge.
Come all along, then.
Get me down!
Hey, Bobby, what the hell are you doing?
I have no idea!
Don't do it!
Get me down!
Get me
down from here!
A lullaby
get me down
of
from here.
Broadway!
Get me down! Get me down!
He jumps.
It's all falling into place for me now. Shiwan Khan needs a beryllium sphere to complete the bomb. I wonder where he intends to find one.
Beryllium sphere. Beryllium sphere! Farley Claymore!
What's that?
Farley Claymore, my father's assistant. He was working on a beryllium sphere, I'm sure of it.
In your father's lab?
No, no. He was working on his own, Meritech Labs down in Southside.
Good.
Yeah, that's a nice way to do for me.
Of course, what?
I was trailing Khan when I suddenly lost him on the corner of 2nd Avenue and Houston Street. There's something very strange about that corner. It's a vacant lot now, but I want you to find out what used to be there.
2nd and Houston. What about Farley Claymore?
Mr. Claymore's gonna receive a little visit.
From the Shadow.
Claymore opens the metal watertight door of a large spherical water tank and steps inside. He shuts the door behind him and turns the locking wheel.
Farley Claymore.
Who's there?
Where is the beryllium sphere, Claymore?
Sphere? What sphere?
Claymore, you idiot! You're being manipulated. Your mind is being controlled by hypnosis.
My mind? Controlled?
Claymore, what have you done with the sphere?
It's too late. I loaded it on a truck.
Take me to it. Now!
Claymore pushes a lever and water gushes in through several large pipes.
Who do you think you're gonna shoot with that, Claymore?
Claymore holds a pistol and looks around. He smiles when he sees two holes in the water where the Shadow's legs are. The Shadow runs and Claymore shoots at him, putting several bullet holes into the side of the tank. He sees blood in the water.
No one controls my mind, Shadow! There's a new world order coming, and I'm gonna be a king! A king!
Claymore turns the locking wheel on the door and opens it. He shuts the door, turns the wheel to lock it, and then wedges a metal pipe in the wheel. The tank is fast filling with water, and Cranston appears, holding his wounded shoulder. He wades over to the door and tries to open it, but it won't budge, the metal bar jamming the locking wheel. Cranston takes off his cloak and looks around the tank. He swims across to the water lever and tries to pull it, but it won't move. He closes his eyes and concentrates.
Margot.
Margot's in an office.
Margot, I need you.
Cranston's telepathic message hits her and she almost falls off her chair. The water has almost reached the roof of the tank. Margot drives through the city traffic at breakneck speed. Cranston thumps on the tank's roof, then dives down. He swims to the bullet holes that Claymore shot in the side of the tank, a tiny flow of air bubbling in through each of them. Cranston pokes his finger through one of the holes, then holds his mouth over a hole and breathes in. He swims over to the door and tries to move the locking wheel again, but it's still jammed. Margot's car pulls up outside, and she runs over to the tank door. She peers through the window in the door and sees submerged Cranston. He mouths, "Open the door," and gestures turning the locking wheel. Margot pulls the metal bar out of the wheel and turns it. Cranston helps from his side, and the door springs open, gallons of water pouring out over Margot and washing her down the stairs. Cranston tumbles out of the tank and lies motionless on the wet ground. Margot rolls him onto his back and lifts his head.
You called?
He smiles. That night, Margot opens Cranston's bedroom door and comes in.
Lamont?
He lies in bed, moaning fitfully, sweat glistening on his face. Margot stares at him. His eyes are wide open, and she gasps as she looks into them. She finds herself in the palace of Cranston, in his former life as Ying Ko. He points at her.
You were not supposed to be here.
Fire leaps out of the fireplace and onto the floor, forming a ring of flames around Margot. She stares ahead, almost in a trance. On a battlefield, warriors on horseback put their opponents to the sword. Among the warriors is Cranston, who wipes his hand across his blood-stained mouth.
Lamont!
Back in his bedroom, Cranston opens his eyes as Margot wipes his face with a damp flannel.
You were dreaming.
He holds her arm and gazes at her.
You saw.
She looks down uneasily.
Do you have any idea what it's like to have done things you could never forgive yourself for?
She leans close to him.
Lamont. Whoever you were, whatever you did, it's in the past.
Not for me, Margot. Never for me.
One of Claymore's shiny metal beryllium spheres is pushed through Khan's chamber on a trolley.
We are victorious! And as victors, we will collect the spoils of war! I will remember each of you. Particularly my special servant. The only American with genius enough to join me. Of his own free will.
Come.
Claymore grins.
Who saw himself a king in my kingdom.
King? Did I say king? Maybe not the best choice of words.
No, it wasn't.
Because actually I was thinking prince, tops. Not even necessarily a duke, baron. Your choice, of course, your choice.
Get Dr. Lane to assemble the bomb.
Of course.
In the name of the new Kar-Kar! The power of God on Earth! The Emperor of Mankind!
A bird's eye view of the tightly packed rooftops of New York. A spinning newspaper stops. Its headline, Madman threatens to blow city sky high, demands billions in ransom.
Read all about it! Madman threatens to blow the city sky high!
A radio report.
Residents of New York City were thrown into a virtual panic today. Police were still trying to determine if, in fact, the threat was real or merely an incredible hoax. Either way, surely the work of a madman.
In Cranston's house, Margot reads the newspaper and runs downstairs, passing a butler on his way up.
Morning, Russell.
The butler turns and follows her. She joins Cranston in the living room.
He's demanded works of art, famous tools, even gold.
Find Khan and you'll find the bomb, I bet. What did you find out about that vacant lot?
Not much, I'm afraid. It was the site of the old hotel monolith. It was finished nearly 10 years ago, but it never opened.
The monolith? I vaguely remember that.
Seems that's the only way anybody remembers it. Before the hotel was completed, the developer went bankrupt and committed suicide.
Oh.
The last record is a sale to a Far Eastern buyer 6 years ago.
When was it torn down?
It doesn't say. I made some calls this morning to newspapers and such. All anybody can remember is up to the time it was sold. Everyone seems to know that it was torn down, but they can't remember when or by whom.
Or if.
He takes her coffee cup from her. Cranston and Margot walk across a junction to the vacant lot that Cranston was staring at earlier. He gazes at the empty lot in wonder.
I can't believe he did it.
Did what? Lamont?
My God.
In Cranston's eyes, a structure gradually appears on the lot. The vast Art Deco multi-story tower that is the Hotel Monolith.
It's beautiful.
What is?
Hey, hey, fella. That building right there, what's the name of that building?
Lunatic. Shi Huan Khan has hypnotized the entire city.
Everyone else passes by, unaware of the hotel.
They don't see it.
He looks back at the building.
None of them see it. But I see it. You and Shrevenitz will receive your instructions. I want you to follow them exactly.
Lamont!
Lightning flashes in the night sky. In Khan's chamber, Dr. Lane opens the beryllium sphere and adjusts the atomic device.
Bet you wish you'd been a little nicer to me now, huh, don't you? Bet you wish you'd listened to my ideas. Bet you didn't count on me being friends with a conqueror, huh, did you?
Hey, that's enough. Activate the bomb.
Dr. Lane flicks a switch, and the interior of the beryllium sphere flashes red.
Set the timer for 2 hours.
A digital display on the side of the sphere counts down from 2 hours. It's hoisted into the air.
You are certain you could duplicate this bomb's design anytime I require?
Absolutely, no problem.
That makes Dr. Lane obsolete. Secure him in a room. He'll die at the hands of his own invention.
Yes, my Khan.
Listen, I know you must have this covered, but shouldn't we be getting out of here too?
There's an aeroplane waiting to take us all to safety. We leave in 1 hour.
They walk off, leaving the bomb hanging from the ceiling. The man in the shadow's control room takes off a pair of headphones and writes a note. No writing appears on the paper. He stamps the bottom of the note, but no stamp appears. The man crosses a rainy street and hands 2 notes to a couple of passing cyclists. A note is pushed under the door of Shrevnitz's house. Shrevnitz gets up and unfolds the note while his wife knits.
What is it, Mo?
Writing appears on the note.
Is it another one of those things from the bowling league?
Mm-hmm.
The message gives a rendezvous point. Margot has also received one and quickly heads off. The writing disappears. Empty, vacant lot. The shadow stares at the lot, and unlike the passers-by, sees the Monolith Hotel with 2 Mongol warriors guarding the front entrance. The warriors spring to attention when they see footsteps running through the rain, but no person. The shadow appears and knocks them cold. He strides into the lobby of the hotel, only his shadow giving a clue as to his whereabouts. He climbs a couple of flights of stairs and appears on a landing, his black cloak billowing behind him. He strides down the landing. In his chamber, Khan hears his laughter.
Inko!
The shadow! Where?
Not here, you idiot! In the building!
Can you tell if he's mad at me? We had a little misunderstanding yesterday, and there might still be hard feelings.
Find him! And kill him!
Kill him? Me?
All of you!
The warriors head off.
Couldn't I just stay here and help you?
Go!
The warrior chief draws his sword as he leads his men down the corridor. Claymore walks behind them, armed with a Tommy gun. They walk down some steps. Claymore takes a torch from one of the warriors.
You guys, go that way.
The warriors all head off in one direction, and Claymore goes the other way. He opens a door and cautiously steps into a dark ballroom. He his Tommy gun in one hand and torch in the other, Claymore nervously walks onto the empty dance floor. The doors swing shut behind him. He turns in shock as all doors close.
Did you think you'd never see me again, Claymore?
I'm right here!
He shoots at the shadow's silhouette.
All around you. Everywhere around you.
Claymore holds his torch against the barrel of his Tommy gun and picks out the shadow's silhouette. He opens fire on the black shape, but it doesn't seem to hurt the shadow. Claymore spins round and round, shooting and laughing manically.
God! Chicken. Sissy. Come out of here and fight like a man!
Claymore's big eyes dart around nervously. A shadow falls across his face. Above him, a shadow slowly covers the ceiling like smoke. Claymore giggles, then looks around. The shadow grabs him by the throat and lifts him into the air.
You're a fool, Claymore.
Get out of my sight!
He throws Claymore to the floor. Looking crazed, Claymore scrambles to his feet and runs through a set of double doors.
There's your exit, Claymore.
The word exit seems to appear on a window. Claymore laughs like a lunatic and dives through the window, falling about 100 feet onto a glass table. Margot and Shrevnitz stand outside the lot.
You know what I love about this job? The excitement.
They hold umbrellas over their heads. The shadow strides down a corridor. A set of double doors opens for him, and he walks into Khan's chamber.
Yingo, I surrender.
You're finished, Khan.
The shadow draws his guns and Khan presses a button. The floor suddenly tilts, throwing the shadow off balance. Khan looks over at the Ferber knife, which opens its eyes and floats up into the air. Khan gestures at the shadow, and the Ferber zooms at him like a rocket. It plunges into the shadow's shoulder, and with a great effort, he manages to pull it out.
Ferber!
The Ferber flies over the tilting floor, dragging the shadow behind it. The shadow wrestles with the Ferber, trying to stop it from stabbing him in the face. The Ferber flies upwards, slamming him against a pillar, then slings him back down onto the tiled floor. Lying dazed, the shadow slowly raises his head.
You are losing your concentration. Your mind is too weak. You are beginning to lose your power.
The shadow's hawkish face has transformed back into Cranston's. Cranston stares at the Ferber, which snarls and shows its needle-sharp teeth. The Ferber flies into the air and plunges down. Cranston fights to stop it sinking into his throat.
Look at you. Can you even control yourself? How can you hope to control the Ferber?
The point of the Ferber pierces Cranston's flesh, and a trickle of blood runs down his neck. Khan steps forward and watches as Cranston stops fighting the dagger and takes on an expression of calm concentration. Khan backs away nervously as the Ferber also stops fighting and hovers above Cranston's throat. The Ferber turns on Khan.
Stop!
Cranston looks up and the Ferber plunges itself into Khan's stomach. Khan's eyes go black. Outside, Margot turns and sees the Monolith Hotel begin to appear.
Oh!
Shrevnitz looks round too.
My God!
That's what he saw!
In his chamber, Khan writhes in pain.
Ah!
In another room, Dr. Lane snaps out of his trance and looks around in bewilderment.
Where am I?
Khan arches backwards and pulls the Ferber out of his stomach. As he screams, all the windows shatter around him. He staggers up a few steps and runs behind a curtain. Cranston runs after Khan, just in time to see his sarcophagus snap shut. Cranston prizes the sarcophagus doors open and finds it empty. He thumps on the back of the sarcophagus and looks around. He spots a tasseled rope and pulls it, then suddenly drops down a trapdoor into a basement. He draws his guns and looks around the basement, which is filled with furniture. He sees Khan's reflection in a mirror.
Khan!
Khan runs and Cranston chases after him. He slows down and stalks past chandeliers and large ornate mirrors. Dr. Lane comes down a flight of stairs and Margot and Shrevnitz spot him.
Dad!
Margot!
Oh!
Where am I?
Are you all right?
What is going on here?
Well, there's this guy. Huh? I'll tell you later. Mo, go call the police.
Okay.
In the basement, Cranston finds Khan surrounded by mirrors. Cranston shoots and hits one of Khan's reflections. Margot and Lane run into Khan's chamber and see the bomb.
Look! There it is!
Oh my God! Oh, this is impressive work! Who did this?
You did. We only have an hour left. Disconnect it!
Cranston walks past more mirrors. Lane sets about the bomb's workings with wire cutters.
Cut this off.
Oh. Ah! Dad, the timer! You gotta stop it!
Oh dear.
The timer speeds towards zero and Dr. Lane quickly reconnects the wire.
2 minutes left!
Lane cuts another wire and the bomb drops to the floor. It rolls along the tilting floor, out of the chamber, down some steps and along a corridor. Margot and Lane chase it.
Oh my God! Hurry! Hurry, Dad!
They come to a flight of stairs.
This way!
Dr. Lane and Margot come out into a lobby area, then hear something above them.
Oh my God, it's upstairs!
They run up a flight of stairs and find the bomb rolling down straight at them. Dr. Lane leaps over a banister and it rolls past.
Oh no, the elevator!
The bomb smashes into a metal mesh elevator gate, which falls across the lift shaft, forming a bridge on which the bomb rests.
Be careful.
Dr. Lane and Margot carefully crawl onto the elevator gate, which gives way a little. There are 10 seconds left on the countdown.
Which wire?
I don't remember. I just don't remember.
Pick one!
Oh, well, what the hell? It's usually green.
He cuts the red.
No! Green! This is green. That's red.
I've got to try to remember that.
In the basement, Cranston and Khan are reflected in several mirrors as they stalk each other. Cranston spins round and concentrates on the mirrors. Khan looks worried.
What are you doing?
The mirrors start to break all around Khan. Cranston shakes with the force of concentration. Cranston opens his eyes and the mirrors splinter into a million pieces. Khan is buffeted by splinters of glass blasting him from all directions. Cranston stares at him, his eyes cold and determined. A pointed shaft of broken mirror rises up from Cranston's feet and hovers in front of his face. Cranston spins his head towards Khan. The shaft of glass embeds itself deep into Khan's forehead. Onlookers are gathered outside the Monolith Hotel and journalists take photos. Margot helps Dr. Lane out of the hotel. A black car pulls up and Wainwright gets out.
Where the hell did that come from?
Wainwright stares at the hotel and takes a sip from his hip flask. Khan is asleep, his eyes flickering. He suddenly wakes to find himself wearing a straitjacket in a padded cell. A doctor comes in.
You, come here.
Look at me.
The doctor sits and Khan gazes deep into his eyes.
Look into my eyes. Yes. Release me at once.
No, we won't have any of that, Mr. Khan. Let's just have a look at those stitches, shall we?
Stitches? What have you done?
Saved your life, that's what. Of course, we had to remove a little section of your frontal lobe, but you'll never miss it, believe me. It's a part nobody ever uses.
But
Khan's head is stitched.
Unless you believe in telepathy.
Wait! Come back here! You! Come here! I am C1 Khan! The last descendant of Genghis Khan! Listen to me! I'm Houdini!
I am Theodore Roosevelt!
I am Napoleon!
I'm Josephine!
I'm Babe Ruth!
I'm Henry VIII!
The doctor, who wears a red opal ring, wanders off down the hospital corridor, passing secure cell doors. Cranston and Margot stand on a nighttime city street, kissing lovingly.
I'll see you later.
Wearing a dinner suit and black bow tie, he walks away.
Hey, how will you know where I am?
Smiling, he turns back.
I'll know.
Cranston puts on his Homburg and walks away down a shadowy alley. The Shadow's piercing eyes peer out from between his fedora and crimson scarf. His face becomes a comic book-style drawing with bright green eyes. The drawing fades to black until only the eyes are left. ITFC audio description.
For an original sin, one with a twist and a bit of a spin. And since I've done all the old ones till they've all been done in, now I'm just looking and I'm gone with the wind, endlessly searching for an original.